Radio Prague News.
Tests in the Moravian Silesian region find no evidence of contamination by Polish industrial salt. Liberec police have found a huge haul of apparently unlicensed tobacco, and President Klaus declines a request to pardon the imprisoned artist Roman Dietz. The State Veterinary Administration has announced that samples from food known to contain Polish-sourced salt in the Moravian Silesian region have thus far not shown any evidence of containing dangerous chemicals. The tests come in the wake of a major scandal in Poland, in which for years several companies were found to have been selling salt intended for industrial purposes to food producers. The Czech Republic has provisionally banned the import of salt from Poland, with Czech Agricultural Minister Petr Bendl subsequently accusing Poland of providing insufficient information to Czech authorities seeking to assess whether Polish goods contaminated with industrial salt have made their way into the Czech food chain. The Moravian Silesian region test took place in Olomouc, with both food and pure salt samples tested. Both were found to be safe, and tests on meat products are currently underway, with the SVA continuing to press Polish authorities to provide more information over the precise nature of the industrial salt in question and which food companies may have purchased it. Customs officials in the Czech city of Liberec have uncovered a huge haul of unlicensed tobacco following an anonymous tip-off. Around 16 tons of tobacco, with an estimated street value of 3.5 million crowns, was found in a storage depot reportedly owned by a 25-year-old Polish man, lacking any documentation confirming that duties had been paid on the product in his possession. Upon arriving at the scene, police found 168 boxes containing either shredded or unshredded rolling tobacco. Some also contained only sawdust. Authorities are continuing to undertake scientific tests to determine exactly what they uncovered. Should they confirm that the man failed to pay duties, he will face a 22 million crown fine and could face up to 8 years in prison. Czech artist Roman Dietz, currently serving the second week of a month-long jail term, has been denied a pardon by the Czech president. Dietz was imprisoned after refusing to pay a 60,000 crown fine levied by the authorities as punishment for the artist's defacing red and green traffic light figures in 2007 to show them in situations such as drinking, urinating and being hanged. Numerous civic initiatives have sprung up in recent months supporting Dietz's cause, while the artist pinned his hopes on a presidential pardon. According to the president's office, Klaus carefully weighed the case but ultimately decided not to intervene. Meanwhile, Dietz's lawyer contacted the Czech Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil last week, asking him to send the case to the country's Supreme Court, arguing that the entire prosecution of Dietz for vandalism was unwarranted. Dozens of taxi drivers staged a protest outside Prague City Hall on Wednesday by deliberately parking in front of the building in Marianské náměstí. The taxi drivers blocked streets around the site as police on the scene issued fines to several of the taxi drivers, who added to the protest by beeping their horns. The protests are in favour of recently rejected proposals to introduce a minimum per kilometre tariff of 24 crowns for all of the city's taxis. The action began in Prague's Strahov district at around 1 p.m, with drivers then making their way to City Hall. Presently, only a maximum tariff of 28 crowns is in effect, with Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda arguing that a minimum fee would reduce competition in the taxi market. Hundreds of taxi drivers have reportedly signed a petition in favour of the minimum tariff plan. A luxury villa built illegally in Pardubice's Našpice Park faces demolition after a ruling by local planning authorities following 4 years of legal wrangling. The villa was built without seeking planning permission by local resident Miloš Holeček at a cost of 10 million crowns. Its owner appealed to local courts an initial ruling, which also found that the building was in breach of local zoning rules, and this has now been upheld, meaning that the demolition must take place within several months. Further, authorities have ruled that Holeček must pay for the demolition himself or face having to pay the price tag for the city arranging the demolition. Holeček claims that local politicians reneged on an earlier promise to change zoning requirements that would make the structure legal. He has now promised to appeal to the European Court of Human Rights over the dispute. And a quick look at the weather. Clear skies continue across much of the Czech Republic with temperatures around 5 degrees Celsius. However, Thursday is expected to bring overcast skies and prolonged showers or even snowfall. And that's the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, a new study warns of possible new attacks on minorities as neo-Nazism in the country gains traction. After that, we'll have a look at what's to come in this year's One World Human Rights Film Festival. And in this week's edition of Spotlight, we take you to Prague's famed Kavarna Slavia. Lucia Kleknerova, one of the managers there, talks about the cafe and her favorite time of the day there.
In the morning, we open at 8, and after the 8, you can see here just people who really comes for a cigarette, newspapers and coffee.
I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. A new study commissioned by the Interior Ministry has suggested that the neo-Nazi movement in the Czech Republic, estimated as 4,000 strong with 400 hardcore members, is successfully pushing an agenda of hatred and racism in troubled parts of the country. As it stands, the last decade or so saw a number of arson attacks against ethnic Roma families, including a highly publicized case where a toddler barely survived and was left with lifelong disabilities. According to the latest report, unless more comprehensive measures are taken soon, racially motivated attacks spurred by the neo-Nazi movement could only increase. Jan Wellinger spoke to political analyst Miroslav Mareš, who headed the project.
From the point of view of neo-Nazism, is the situation relatively stable? However, what we see now is the rise of the usual racism. We can see the involvement of normal population in the anti-Roma riots, and the neo-Nazis are only drivers of some violent activities, mostly the anti-Roma prejudices. Of course, there's a lot of problems within the so-called Roma question. However, now we can hear the racist statements also from the local politicians from non-extremist parties. And, of course, some extremists now are saying the established political forces use our traditional program.
Are they successful in pushing their agenda?
Yeah, they are successful in pushing this agenda, and of course they are now active on public demonstrations. In the last 1st May demonstration, 1st May rally in Brno, it was typical because some members of neo-Nazi scene participated on the demonstration, the rally of Workers' Party of Social Justice.
You've just gotten back from Brussels, where you were at a conference examining the problem of extremism. To what degree is the rise of the right a pan-European problem?
It is a European problem, because we can see various kinds of extremism. We can see this extremism of established political parties or the far-right parties, for example, in Hungary. On the other hand, we can see also the growing militancy of some parts of extremist spectrum, including the phenomena of rising extremist terrorism, as we've seen last year in Norway, the act of Anders Breivik, or now the group National Socialist Underground in Germany, or the stable neo-Nazi terrorism in Russia, or the neo-Nazi group Death Squad in Hungary in 2009. I think that the rising extremist scene is security threat also from the point of view of political violence and terrorism.
One of the key findings of your study is that there could be a type of attack or continued attacks against Roma families in the Czech Republic within the next 5 years. This threat is one, obviously, that needs to be taken seriously.
Yeah, this so-called Roma question is the most important profile field of contemporary extreme right. And maybe that because the traditional parties, the established parties, now use the anti-Roma rhetoric, maybe it could be also something as a background for the more militant activities of this neo-Nazi scene against Roma. This arson attacks, these Molotov cocktails, they are relatively cheap on one hand, however effective on the other hand.
What are some comprehensive means that the government should take, some steps that should be taken in order to combat the deepening of this problem?
So maybe that's the most important conclusion is the aiming to the prevention of such activities, to the prevention of extremist ideas within the young generation. Yeah, I think that the repressive mechanism that exists in Czech Republic, however, what is a bigger problem is the lack of prevention on the primary schools, in high schools, etc.
That was political analyst and extremism expert Miroslav Mareš talking to Jan Wellinger. This is Radio Prague. The One World International Human Rights Film Festival has just started in Prague. This year's edition brings over 100 films from 72 countries to the Czech capital, where documentary lovers can visit special festival screenings until March 15th. With such an abundance of interesting documentaries, it's something difficult to determine what to see first. Sara Barufka asked program director Katarzyna Bartoszowa about her highlights and about the theme of this year's main category.
The main category, the main topic of this year's edition is called Youthquake, and we would like to stress that the main power behind all the revolutions all over the world are young people, and they all went on their squares in their capitals and other cities and would like to express their wishes, what they want to change, and what they want to, they mostly want to break out the dictatorships in their countries, especially in the Arab states, and in the rest of the world they protest against the current situation in the democracies, which are Greek, Spain, and other places.
Great, and aside from this protest, upheaval and revolt section, what other categories are there in the festival? And maybe if you could just mention some of the highlights.
We have like many other thematic categories this year. One of them is called so-called civilization. And this category is devoted to the films on the ecological topics. You should see the film which is called You Have Been Trumped. It's a British film which tells the story of the very well-known businessman Donald Trump. And it's an eco-topic from the Scottish countryside where he wants to build a new golf resort and to somehow damage the place. And the other film from this eco section is called The Island President, and this is a film which tells the story of this president of Maldives Islands, which where are at this moment very hard political protests, and he had to go out from his current position.
That sounds really interesting. So there's a lot to see, obviously, but I believe it's not just films and documentaries that you're bringing. There's also other parts of the program, so maybe you could describe what else we can expect.
It's now traditional. Every year we organize concerts. One of them will be organized after the world premiere of the film Punk in Africa, which is in Lucerna on Thursday. And we are going to have a party after the world premiere of this film with DJ and in Lucerna Cafe. And then we have many other accompanying events, which is, for example, screening for senior citizens, screening for children, and EaseDoc platform, which is mostly for the film professionals, but people which are accredited to One World can also come and see what is there interesting.
Sara Barufka there was talking to program director of the One World Film Festival, Katarzyna Bartoszowa. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Prague's wealth of traditional coffee houses is a legacy from the era of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But even in today's hectic time, grabbing a quick cup on the run is fortunately not the only option for coffee lovers in the Czech capital. Probably the best-known cafe in the Golden City is Kavarna Slavia, or Café Slavia. Sara Barufka recently visited the traditional coffee house and has this edition of Spotlight.
It is rare for Café Slavia to be this quiet. Usually the 300-seat Art Deco coffee house is crammed with guests and tourists are lining up by the door for a seat. On a quiet Monday morning, however, just briefly after 8, you can soak up the beautiful leisurely atmosphere and have the café almost to yourself. Lucia Kleknerová, one of the managers at Slavia, joined me for a quiet cup of coffee and told me all about this legendary Prague institution, which first opened its doors in 1884.
Cafe was opened in 1881 together with the National Theatre. It's like cooperation because they built the National Theatre, and also here was the building exactly built up for to be the coffee house.
After the cafe first opened in August 1884, it quickly became a hotspot for lovers of culture. Of course, this was due mostly to its proximity to the National Theatre. Among the regulars at Café Slavia at that time were the composer Bedřich Smetana, the actor Jindřich Mošna, poet Jaroslav Seifert, avant-garde writer Vítězslav Nezval, and the famous Josef Čapek, along with many others. In a way, the list of visitors reads like a who is who of Bohemian culture at the time. During the era of the First Republic, the interior was changed to the popular style of Art Deco and has remained unaltered since then. When you step inside Café Slavia, it almost feels as if you were taking a step back in time. The original Tonet chairs, the dark wood tables and the green marble walls evoke the long-gone glamorous era of the 1920s. Of course, much has changed since then, but is coffeehouse culture still going strong in Prague? I put the question to Lucie Kleknerová.
I don't think we are on the first place. I think Austria and we and his coffeehouse are more, you know, more upper level than we are. But in Prague you can find still some nice coffeehouse which are really traditional and full of atmosphere, and I think it's good to still to be here, not to have just modern and new.
And you work here, of course, you're here all every day, very often. What is your favorite time of the day? And it must get quite full here, so do you have a special time where you think this is when Café Slavia is at its best?
That's two times. The first one is in the morning, because in the morning we open at 8, and after the 8 you can see here just people who really comes for a cigarette, newspapers and coffee, and it's really calm and nice and no rushed. Nothing is like making you stress or something like that. It's really, really nice. And these people who are coming, that's mostly Czechs who maybe have meetings or some lovers who came for breakfast, I don't know. So it's really nice. And the other one is in the evening, because in the evening it's totally different atmosphere. And you can hear here piano player who is playing live. And it's more rushed, a lot of people. And it's great again. And you can see the Prague Castle under the lights, and it's more romantic and also nice.
And initially you said this cafe opened to be a place for theater goers to go after theater. Now the National Theater is still very active, still across the street from you. Has this tradition remained?
Yes, we are happy to have here people before and after the theater, because it's part of the atmosphere, because they came, you know, nicely dressed, and they just, you can see that they are going to the theater, so they are pleased, they come for coffee or wine, and they are not in a hurry, or maybe in the beginning, and after they came in, they are just relaxing and talking.
Of course, a coffee house is only as glamorous and interesting as its guests. And Café Slavia can pride itself in its long list of famous visitors, among them the late and much beloved former president Václav Havel. He was Lucie Kleknerová's favorite guest, but she has also seen Hillary Clinton drink coffee here, and the well-known Czech Jewish writer Arnošt Lustig was one of Café Slavia's regulars as well. What was he like as a guest?
He was always full of fun, and he requested always some special things, like, I would like to have reska, tomato sauce, but we don't have it on the menu. And we say, yes, of course, we can make. And in the kitchen they say, of course, we will do.
That's very nice. And maybe here we can stop and just talk about the phenomenal view you have from this cafe.
So from the windows you can see Zsófin, And you can see Petrinská rozhledna and also Prague Castle. Mostly it's more beautiful, it's in the evening.
And I guess we're right by the Vltava River?
Yeah, and the Vltava River, exactly. And all the Malá Strana side.
And the window seats, I believe, fill up very quickly?
Every day are full. And if somebody wants to sit next to the window, it's better to make reservation.
Okay, so a note to guests. So we are now walking towards what is one of the main drawing points of Kavarna Slavia, the painting of the absinthe fairy, the green lady. Maybe you can describe it a bit.
Okay, so the painting is quite large. I think it's two meters and 1.80 meters or something like that. It's not original, it's copy. Original is, I think, by Mr. Železny, but we are not sure. So this is not original, just copy. And on the picture, which is in, again, brown colors, still with chairs, tonnets, and around tables, you can see a man who is wearing a jacket, white t-shirt. You can see on the table absinthe, the glass with absinthe, and of course newspapers, still the same like now. No, and yeah, opposite this man who is sitting quite sad, or he looks sad, is the waiter, which is ready to serve. And on the table is a green naked lady. That's the lady who is maybe from the absent or something like that, a dream or the muse which is helping to think about and write some things.
The Absinthe Drinker, a painting by Victor Oliva, has certainly become an important element of Café Slavia in the past 15 years. Originally, a painting of the mother of the Slavs, Slavia, hung in its place, but it was moved to the city's gallery in 1997, despite the protest of many Prague residents. During the times of the communist regime, the cafe became state property, but it still continued to draw the artistic and eclectic types, even during the normalization period and after the invasion of Prague by Warsaw Pact troops in 1968. Among the guests in those days were Václav Havel, then a dissident and playwright, and the poet Jiří Goláš. The iconic coffee house has also found its way into some works of literature. Jaroslav Seifert refers to it in his book Haleová kometa, and in 1985 Otta Philipp published a novel titled Kavarna Slavia. While today the cafe draws many tourists, it still remains popular with Prague residents as well. On the quieter weekdays or early in the morning, when the sunlight is reflected by the nearby Vltava River and shines into the coffee house, it is easy to see why.
That was Sarah Barufka with that edition of Spotlight. Topping off our show now for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech, brought to you by Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax.
Yes, we are back with our Czech teaching series focusing on animal idioms in the Czech language. Today's episode is dedicated to man's best friend. Yes, that's right. Despite a general dog-loving attitude in contemporary Western society, the linguistic heritage passed on by our ancestors suggests that dogs were not always friends. Something I sadly must agree with when watching my step carefully on Prague pavements. Anyway, at least in the language, dogs are dirty, flea-ridden and ruthless animals that bite. Otherwise, Czechs would not say
Život je pes.
Life is a dog. Life is tough. Life is merciless.
Život je pes.
If we think our life is no good, that everyone treats us badly, we say it's a dog's life.
Je to psí život.
As if dogs have a tough life these days. Nevertheless, a difficult life full of misery is
psí život.
If we are feeling lousy, either physically or mentally, we say
Je mi pod psa.
Literally, I'm feeling under the dog.
Je mi pod psa.
I don't know what your experience is, but I would hesitate to rely on the saying that a barking dog never bites.
Pes, který štěká, nekouše.
The Czech version goes, a dog that barks does not bite.
Pes, který štěká, nekouše.
Another phrase shared by both Czech and English is the one about dogs and fleas.
Kdo se psi líhá, s blechami vstává.
He who lies down with dogs will get up with fleas.
Kdo se psi líhá, s blechami vstává.
It is often the case that animal idioms refer to human nature, human virtues or vices, more than about the animals as such. Such as this one.
Starého psa novým kouskům nenaučíš.
You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Old people, just like old dogs, find it difficult to learn new things. That's why they say
Starého psa novým kouskům nenaučíš.
And one last dog idiom to end the show with. If Czechs look for the heart of a problem, a hidden cause behind something, they say they want to find where the dog is buried.
Kde je zakopán pes?
The buried dog is something like the proverbial skeleton in the cupboard. Something hidden in order not to be found, but still causing trouble. So, once again, the phrase goes
Kde je zakopán pes?
So that's all for today, I'm afraid, but you can join us next time for another edition of the ABC of Czech. Until then, it's goodbye.
Naschledanou.
That was Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax with the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that you can find all of our programming on our website, radio.cz, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to english@radio.cz. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course you can send a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.